Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the March 24th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, episode 73 of the series. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be reviewing the NHRA Amalie Oil Gator Nationals, talking Trans Am, ARCA, IndyCar, IMSA, and more. Let's begin with a little bit of a discussion about the Amalie Oil Gator Nationals, which I had the pleasure of attending this past weekend as a media member of the National Hot Rod Association, due to my affiliation with this particular program, Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. It was quite the event, and I'm really happy I got to go out there. It was an amazing time. The NHRA definitely has their act together, and I hope that they're able to keep it together. It's been a great thing for motorsports to have an event such as the National Hot Rod Association, especially with the fact that the International Hot Rod Association, the IHRA, which this program has supported a great deal in the past, seems to be involved in what one of the team members there at the Gator Nationals called a shitstorm. They've had a lot of changes in the front office there at the IHRA, and some of their competitors were actually present at the NHRA Gator Nationals this year, which was kind of surprising. But not really when you consider the fact that there have been so many changes in the International Hot Rod Association in the off-season. The fact that they've reduced the size of their fields, they've reduced their schedule dramatically. And it seems that they have a plan, but what that plan is, it hasn't been totally revealed. They are entering into a partnership now with the IHRA is currently entering into a partnership with Racer Magazine. But I checked out the page that had supposedly had all the new articles on there about from Racer Magazine, and all those articles were actually press releases that I have posted myself on SpeedwayDigest.com. Not all of them I posted, but if you take a look at the Racer.com/IHRA page, you'll notice that if you also look at the racing news section of SpeedwayDigest.com, there'll be the exact same articles there. Some of the wording might be a teeny bit different, but pretty much it's the same thing. The IHRA is blowing their own horn, but I don't know how loudly they should be blowing it, considering it's not that huge of a deal. Although it might end up being, you never know. For the past 47 years, the NHRA Gator Nationals have thrilled tens of thousands of fans annually, and in 2016, if the storied event was no exception. As has become a tradition at Gainesville Raceway, the uninvited guest, Mother Nature, found a way to disrupt the schedule, but the majority of the pro contest was held without incident. Before we get into the event itself, let's talk a little bit about the crowd. The attendance, though not full by any means, was far more than fair. Roughly 65% of the grandstands were full on both Saturday and Sunday, and given the dire forecast, that's not too shabby. The breakdown of the crowd also seemed to be a much more sustainable mix than has been seen at the other events your racing news reporter has attended this season. What do I mean by that? Well, take the Rolex 24, for instance. The average age of attendees is probably in their 60s at that event, and aging. Sure, there are a few people under that bracket, but the numbers of gray-haired fans far outnumber the others. It's a similar story at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg last weekend. Last year, when I covered the season-opening Daytona 500, as well as the season-ending four championship weekend, the mix was a bit better, but still tended towards the baby boomer generation. The best mix of old, young, and in-between that I've been to recently was probably the FIA Formula E Miami Grand Prix, which drew a crowd of people who may never have even attended any sort of auto racing event. However, the NHRA seems to have a better formula to attract a wide variety of ages, races, and sexes to its events. It is not an older white male club by any means, and the socioeconomic mix of individuals also seems more representative of our culture as a whole. Why is that exactly? That is pretty much the million-dollar question. In my humble opinion, it's because people in the stands feel closer to the drivers, cars, and teams than they do in other forms of motorsports. They see a Ford that looks like a Ford, a Chevy that looks like a Chevy, a Dodge that looks like a Dodge, and a Toyota that, well, says Toyota. And they think possibly, or perhaps it could be them on the track. They feel a connection to the cars, and sometimes even place small wagers as to which lane prevail. The lack of alcohol sales also played a part in providing a more family-friendly atmosphere at the Gator Nationals. The only place you can purchase an adult beverage at the facility was a small tent in the middle of the manufacturer's midway, and you're required to consume it within the tent. Now, I'm sure that Mellow Yellow, Powerade, and the water vendors loved this, but so did concerned parents and people who didn't have to worry about avoiding drunk drivers on the way into and out of the parking areas. The on-track activity was also a plus. Previously on this program, we've discussed how having a full schedule can make patrons feel their ticket cost is a better value. Gainesville Raceway obviously understands this fact and made sure that the race fans can enjoy action from the moment the gates open until just before they close. The open garages also add an additional bonus to those who'd like to see what happens behind the scenes, and the numerous displays from manufacturers, souvenir vendors, and sales booths gave even the casual fans something to gaze upon. Our first guest this evening is John Gadosh, who competed last weekend. John Gadosh Jr. acquired the need for speed at the age of 16 while taking his father's Grand Prix 390 horsepower engine and putting it in a 67 Firebird. Ever since, John got that first taste of Pontiac power, and the quest to go faster hasn't stopped. Over the years, and after a series of engine and chassis upgrades, that 67 Firebird moved from running high 12s to running 9.05 at 154 miles per hour. John raced that first Firebird locally until 1996, when during a nostalgia race at 7580 Raceway, he rolled that precious multiple times. John and his friends Wes were already planning their next Firebird before they even left the track. John moved to a 200 Firebird with a 537 cubic inch motor and ran 790s, winning multiple times in a class dominated by Chevrolets. This still did not cure his itch to go faster. John and his wife Tina purchased a 2007 Pontiac GTO Pro Stock car, and in the spring of 2008, John earned his NHRA Pro Stock license, placing him in the elite category of professional drag racers. John continued to race this GTO part-time on the NHRA Mellow Yellow drag racing circuit until 2015, when he decided to take another leap of faith. Yeah. In 2015, John and Tina purchased a Chevrolet Camaro from Gray Motorsports as an effort to grow his Gadosh Performance team. The entire team has made improvements by investing in new engines and stepping up the new 2016 fuel injection rules. In 2016, John and his all-volunteer team look forward to finally earning their first round win and making strides forward in performance. We are now pleased to welcome John Gadosh into the Thunderdome.
How are you doing, guys?
This evening?
Hello?
We know you just returned from your race in Gainesville, the Gator Nationals, last weekend. How'd it go for you?
Wasn't too bad. We had a really good showing. The performance was where we expected it to be. We think we can go faster. We know we can go faster. We just need some more laps on the car. You know, we only went down to Bradenton and tested for 2 days prior to going to Gainesville. And everybody else, all the rest of the teams on the tour, have actually had two races prior to us and probably about 75 to 100 laps more than what we can than what we put down the track. But it was a very good outing for us, and we're real happy with how things turned out.
What are your goals for the 2016 season?
We'd like to finish in the top 15 again, and we would like to try to win a couple rounds this year. We think we have a really good opportunity to do that with the horsepower that we get from Gray Motorsports and the Camaro that we have right now. It's a very good competitive car. Jonathan Gray drove the car the year prior to me buying it. And he went to three final rounds with it and won one of the final rounds with the car. So we know we have a very good competitive car, and we have good power. We just have to learn how to harness the power and get it to go where we want it to be.
What's your favorite track on the series that you compete on?
That's a tough call, because there's about four or five tracks we really enjoy going to. Bristol is a beautiful racetrack to go to. Maple Grove, we love racing the Grove at the end of the year because we're always fast there, and it's, you know, kind of like one of our home tracks. Englishtown, New Jersey, that's another great track. We've always gone fast there. And we like going to Texas. We've actually did pretty well out in Dallas the two times we've gone out there. So we enjoy most of the racetracks. They're really, really good fan-friendly places. I mean, we have a lot of fans all over the place. It's neat because the fans can actually come in, see the car. You know, I'm really fan-friendly with kids. I like putting kids in the car, taking their pictures. And, you know, we give away a lot of T-shirts and hats and stuff like that for the kids. We enjoy that. That's the next part of the sport. Without the kids, we can't keep growing.
With the new television package, increased competition, and the definite decline in the IHRA, especially this year, the IHRA seems to be on track for a great year in 2016. Why do you think people should come out and see your race?
Oh, because it's a great time. There's no other form of racing that you can come out and you can get this close to the cars, get this close with the drivers, and actually interact with them. The competition in IHRA Pro Stock is like none other. We have the closest racing that there actually is. The cars are sophisticated beyond anybody's belief. The thought process that goes into actually each setup of the car for each time we actually take it down a racetrack, there's 75 different adjustments that we can make, you know, to go 6 seconds. And a lot of stuff goes on in between the 6 seconds, between letting out the clutch, shifting it 5 times, and going through the lights and pulling the parachutes within 6 seconds.
What's your most memorable racing moment?
I'd have to say to date was the first time I qualified New England in 2011. That was that's probably, so far to date, my best moment in racing. You know, we've won 3 championships and won multiple final rounds and everything else in my bracket racing and my heads-up racing career. But that first time I qualified at an NHRA race, that's it. Now, my next time will be the first time I win a round. That's going to be our next goal.
And what is your ultimate racing goal?
I'd love to win a championship at NHRA Pro Stock. I think that's one of the goals for everybody that's ever ran Pro Stock and whoever wants to run Pro Stock. It's one of the most elite classes out there. The drivers are tough. There's no gimmies out here. I don't care. Anytime you pull up to the line, whether you have a tenth advantage on them as far as ET, you go up there and you sleep on the light, they're going to get you. So there's no easy runs here.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening and wish you lots of luck in the NHRA Pro Stock Series for the rest of this year and beyond.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to take this pipe performance exhaust Camaro, and we're going to see what we can do with the rest of the year. Hopefully we can get our first round win, and maybe we go to a final. I think we've got enough power, and we just got to get the right setup, and we should be in good shape.
There you go. Well, good luck, and thank you for coming on the program.
No problem. Thank you very much, and have a great evening.
Once again, that was John Gadosh. We'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show this evening. His entire crew is a volunteer crew, so we'd be sure to, when you head out to the NHRA event, be sure to support them and their wonderful Pro Stock team. They have a pretty good driver, and they have lofty goals, and I think they'll be able to make them at least by the end of this year. We hope. Well, we're standing by for our next guest. We'll go ahead and listen to one of our songs from Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. Full Throttle, appropriate for the series once sponsored by the Full Throttle drink.
We go around. let me go by on the outside. Wait and see ya. I'm afraid it's all over now.
Hi, this is Jason Vines, author of What Did Jesus Drive? And you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Before we delve deeper into the world of nitromethane, we'll take a small detour into the world of methanol with our next guest, James Hinchcliffe. James Hinchcliffe is a Canadian race car driver currently competing in the IndyCar series. He's also the self-proclaimed mayor of Hinchtown on social media. On January 10, 2012, it was announced that Hinchcliffe would succeed Danica Patrick as driver of the number 27 GoDaddy.com car for Andretti Autosport. In 2014, it was announced that Hinchcliffe would join Schmidt Peterson Motorsports for the 2015 season and drive the number 5 car. He competed in the beginning of the season until a horrible accident in May left him fighting for his life. Now, 10 months later, he is back behind the wheel of his IndyCar and ready to take the series by storm. Earlier today, we had the opportunity to chat with this amazing driver, and we are pleased to bring you that interview now.
First off, congratulations on your return to IndyCar racing. How did it feel to get back in the car after your accident?
I mean, you know, obviously that was the entire reason, I went through everything I did was to get back in the car. That was the last 10 months have been working towards. So for me, it was great to be able to get back to the track with everybody and get those competitive juices flowing again. So it was a very, very exciting weekend for sure.
What are you most looking forward to next weekend in Long Beach?
Oh, next weekend is Phoenix.
Okay.
It's getting back to oval racing, obviously. So it's something that I haven't done in a while. And we had a pretty good test there, a few weeks ago. And it's just about, again, getting back to that style of racing because it's very different, obviously, from street course racing. And one of the best parts about IndyCar racing in general is that we get to go to all these different kinds of tracks. So it's just going to be exciting to get back to that type of track.
Do you think the new aero package modifications made in the car will help you be more competitive this season?
No doubt. Honda put a lot of work into the car in the off-season, both the aero kit and the engine, and there's no doubt that the gap's a lot closer than it was to our competitors. It really puts us back in the race, and we saw that in St. Pete, and hopefully we see that again in Phoenix and carry out for the rest of the year, and we'll slowly try and make the cars better and better and try and pull it out front of the competitors.
Growing up, who was your favorite driver?
Greg Moore was my favorite guy growing up.
And why is that?
Well, he was Canadian, and he kind of got into IndyCar racing right as I was getting into go-karting, and so the timing of it all was pretty convenient. And, on top of that, he was a hell of a great racing driver, and he seemed to be a great guy. So as a young kid who was just getting into the sport, it made it really easy to sort of follow him and idolize him.
It's been several years now since Firestone became the sole tire provider in IndyCar. Do you think they've done a good job in that role? And what improvements still need to be made, in your opinion?
Honestly, Firestone, I think, is one of the strongest partners that IndyCar's had, over the last, several decades. They go back to the very beginning of racing at Speedway, and they've been a dominant force in the tire category for a long time. And, what we do going racing on ovals at 230 miles an hour is very unique in motorsports. And, I don't think any tire company is quite as accomplished and does quite as good a job as Firestone does in that arena. So for us, as IndyCar drivers, we're incredibly lucky to have a partner like them, and we think they're doing a great job.
How do you feel about the push-to-pass technology? Do you think it's been overused, or what's your opinion about it?
I think push-to-pass is a great tool. It certainly doesn't make passing easy. It's not that at all. It kind of makes those maybe moments a little bit less questionable, which I racing better, you know, and everybody's given the same amount, and, you know, there's some strategy as to how you use it. So, you know, for me, I find it a fairer tool than, say, DRS, like Formula One uses. That's proximity-based. This one, like I said, there's some strategy involved to when you use it and when you don't. Do you use it to attack? Do you use it to defend? And I think it's a cool added element.
Many of your compatriots in the IndyCar paddock have competed in at least one event in the FIA Formula E Series in the past year. Will we be seeing you in any FIA Formula E races in the future?
I'm open to driving anything if I get the call. It's something we toyed with when I was still driving for Michael, but there are no immediate plans, but that's not to say that if there was an opportunity, I wouldn't take it.
And speaking of you making the call, I know you raced in the Rolex 24 last season. Do you have any plans in competing in that next year?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I took this year off just because of, the focus to return to IndyCar and making sure my fitness was where I needed to be for that and everything along that line. But it's a race that I really enjoy running, and hopefully I can be back on that grid next year.
What track are you most looking forward to in the 2016 schedule?
I'm super excited to go back to Road America. Indy obviously is its own deal, and of course I'm looking forward to going back to Toronto, but, you know, Road America has been my favorite road course, you know, in America for years, and so getting the opportunity to go back in IndyCar and get to race there is something I'm really excited about.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us today, and wish you lots of luck in the IndyCar season throughout the rest of the year.
All right,
sounds
good.
Thank you.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Once again, that was James Hinchcliffe, and we'd like to thank him very much for coming on the program this evening. He drives the number 5 car for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports in the IndyCar Series. Our next guest this evening is J.R. Todd, driver of the Sealmaster Toyota Top Fuel Dragster for Kalitta Motorsports. The 34-year-old Indianapolis resident is entering his third season driving for Kalitta Motorsports. Under crew chiefs Connie Coletta and Rob Flynn, the team is currently in 7th position in the Top Fuel standings. In 2015, Todd qualified for a second consecutive countdown for the championship, ultimately ending in the season in 9th place. Last year, he had one win in Seattle, 2 final round appearances, both in Seattle and in Charlotte, 2 number 1 qualifiers in Charlotte and Las Vegas, and 20 total round wins. In the off-season, Rob Flynn joined Todd's team in December. Flynn will assume the role of co-crew chief on Todd's Top Fuel Dragster. Also announced in December, Toyota will provide manufacturer support to Team Coletta's Top Fuel Dragsters by Todd and Doug Coletta. This will be the first time that Coletta Motorsports has had manufacturer support on their Top Fuel Dragsters. Toyota has backed the Team Coletta Funny Cars since 2007. Also announced in January, Sealmaster joined Todd as the primary sponsor on his Top Fuel Dragster. Sealmaster expanded their relationship with Todd from 2 events in 2015 to the complete season, all 24 events, in 2016. He has a 3-3 round record with a semifinal finish in the season opener in Pomona. Of his 131 total career events, he has 8 wins, 13 career final round appearances, 8 number 1 qualifiers, and 115 career round wins. This past weekend in Gainesville, Todd earned a round win over Steve Torrence on Sunday. That was the third consecutive season that Todd earned a round win in Gainesville. We are now happy to welcome J.R. Todd to the program.
Hey,
how are you doing this evening?
Thanks for having me on, guys. Good.
You just returned from racing at Gainesville in the Gator Nationals. How'd the race go for you?
Not too bad. It could have been better, but it also could have been worse, I suppose. We unloaded a new car, our second car that we've built in-house this year to Coletta Motorsports. So kind of working the bugs out of it during qualifying and got qualified 10th, I believe it was, and ended up winning first round against Steve Torrence, which he's one of the powerhouse teams in the NHRA Top Fuel division with Alan Johnson, you know, being a tuning consultant. He's one of, if not the best out there when it comes to calling the shots on a Top Fuel car. So to get by him first round, that was a pretty big deal for us. But second round, the track got hotter, and the temperatures they got hotter as well, and conditions weren't as good as first round, and went up there a little too aggressive and spun the tires second round and ended our day.
Can you describe for us a little how it feels to zoom from zero to over 300 miles an hour in less than 2 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, it's a rush driving a top fuel dragster. They're the quickest and fastest accelerating cars on the planet. I mean, we're going, over 100 miles an hour in less than a second. So it can be a lot of wear and tear on your body. I mean, when you step on the gas on these things, you're experiencing 5 Gs, and then you get to the end of that 1,000 feet and pull the parachute, it's another 5 Gs the other way trying to throw you out of the car. So there's a lot going on, and 3.7 seconds at 330 miles an hour, it'll get your attention every time you hit the gas on these things. It's like driving a land-based rocket, I guess you could say.
What's your favorite racing moment so far?
I'd say any one of my wins that I've had in my career. I mean, it's so hard to go out there and put together 4 rounds and win against the competition these days. The cars are so evenly matched, and a lot of times it comes down to the driver on the starting line just getting the job done with their reaction time. So whenever you can walk out of the event with a Wally in your hand, you've accomplished something. So I'd say any one of those 8 wins, that's been my best moment so far in my career.
Do you have any race day rituals you go through before you get into the car?
Not really. I mean, I kind of have a routine the way I put my driving gear on, I guess, just to make sure I'm doing everything the same and the right way every time. But nothing too superstitious or anything like that. More just a routine habit more than anything, just so I don't forget what I'm doing.
What's your ultimate racing goal?
For me, my goal from day one, once I got in the top fuel division, was to win races and, win championships. And, there in 2014, we came, close to battling for that championship at the end of the year with Tony Schumacher, and ended up, a handful of rounds behind him and finished out the year in second place, which is, the highest I've finished in the top fuel points championship run so far. But the ultimate goal at the end of the day is to win a championship. So we still got our work cut out for us, and I have my my best opportunity that I've had in a long time at accomplishing that with this Coletta group. And we got some great backers on board with us this year with Steelmaster and Toyota, and they've given us the parts and pieces that we need to go out there and compete and to get the job done. So hopefully come November we're talking about a world championship.
What's the next race on your schedule?
We're off this weekend due to the Easter holiday. Then we'll travel out to Las Vegas and get rocking and rolling out there.
And how do you think you're going to do out there? What's your history at that track?
I mean, my past history with the Coletta gang has been pretty well at that track. That's actually the first race that I started driving for them in 2014. And since then, we've had some number one qualifiers and, gone to a final round there. And just our team as a whole between all four of our cars, I mean, we've done really well at that track. So I don't see any reason why one of us, if not, all of us can go out there and be successful and hopefully make it to the final round and come out of there with the trophy.
What's your opinion of the 4-wide Nationals held in Charlotte?
For those that haven't experienced it as a fan, I'd say it's something that it's worth checking out in person one time. I mean, there's a lot going on with 4 cars out there. It's kind of hard for everybody to pay attention to what's going on. And as a driver, it's also a challenge just because the starting line technique's a little different as opposed to, just 2 cars up there. The staging process, you got to kind of pay more attention to what's going on with 3 more cars next to you, and takes a little more focus. But it's a different format that we're not used to, and I'm to be honest with you, I'm glad that we only do it once a year. But for the fans, it's pretty exciting to see 40,000 horsepower going down the track at one time. It's pretty loud.
And what's your favorite track on the schedule?
For me, I would have to go with the track here in Indianapolis. I mean, it's one of the tracks where I got my start when I was 10 years old, and you know, now I live less than 10 minutes from the track, and it's our biggest race of the year, the U.S. Nationals. I mean, everybody, they bring their A game for that one special event, and even those who haven't won a championship, if they won Indy, they've accomplished something. They're remembered for that. So if I could win the U.S. Nationals, I mean, that'd be a huge feather in my cap and, you know, a lifelong dream come true. So, by far the track here in Indy is my favorite.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening and wish you lots of luck in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks and throughout the rest of the year as well.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Once again, that was J.R. Todd, driver of the Steelmaster Toyota Top Fuel Dragster for Coletta Motorsports. Well, we're standing by for our next guest on the program. We'll go ahead and hear another song from Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. This one is entitled Fence Kids, again, in honor of all the kids who gathered along the fences there at the Gator Nationals this weekend.
Thank you. Hi, this is Jason Alder from AB Motorsports, and you're listening to the Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Our final guest of the evening is Chase Briscoe, who we're hoping, fingers crossed, will actually call in this time.
Oh, sorry, an open wheel racer by trade. Chase Briscoe made his ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards debut with Cunningham Motorsports at Lucas Oil Raceway in 2015, finishing a solid 10th after qualifying 5th. Later in September, he finished a career best 5th at Salem Speedway after qualifying 7th.
Chase Briscoe finished 4th at Lucas Oil 200 driven by General Tire at Daytona in February. Briscoe qualified 3rd after having the fastest time in the first practice session. We confirmed with him twice today that he would be calling in. Last week he had a little bit of an issue. He apologized for not being able to call in last week, so we have our fingers crossed. We're knocking on wood right now that he will be calling in about 3 or 4 minutes, hopefully, if not sooner. But you never know. Third time should be a charm, though.
Yeah.
So did you happen to catch any of the Gator Nationals this past weekend?
I watched a little bit of it. I looked up the results just to see if my prediction and your prediction was even close. And sorta. It was
sorta, yeah. It was close, but it wasn't quite there. Got the last name right anyway. Force did really well in the she won Top Fuel, but the first name was Brittany, not Courtney. So that worked.
Yeah. So
it was a really good race.
It was
awesome.
It
was a really good race. It was pretty good. It was actually really simple to get the tickets, so that was a good thing. There wasn't much traffic going in there. It slowed down a little bit on the way in, but it was a pretty quick 4 hours up the road. And got into the track. The weather was pretty good on Saturday. So got in there, watched the racing in the afternoon. And it kind of looked iffy when we first got there, but it improved quickly enough. And they got a few rounds in on Saturday, and Sunday was pretty good too. So.
Well, that's good. I know the pictures and stuff I've seen, the weather looked pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was different than what they forecast. But when we first got there on Saturday, it was iffy. It was really iffy. It was gray. It was a little misty. Then it picked up, and then it stopped, and then it picked up, and then it stopped. But it actually only took them about an hour or so to dry the track when they finally got it dry. So that was pretty good. And then they had all the action. Everybody was anxious to go. Some of the sportsman drivers, they left early, probably because of the fact that they weren't quite as confident as the pro guys that the weather was going to clear. But it was an awful lot of people there, a lot of racing. The grandstands were probably a little more than 60% full, which isn't too bad. There was definitely a different crowd there on Sunday than there was on Saturday. And I think a lot of that's due to the fact that they do just sell the their main people who go there are just the one-day ticket holders. So, but it was pretty cool. Definitely a great mix of people. It's a healthy mix of people as opposed to some of the other races I've been to in the past couple of years. So it's definitely a good thing for the sport. If I had to, I'd say the NHRA is probably the healthiest form of racing out there, just because of the fact that there was such a different mix of people in the grandstands and and wandering around. It was pretty good.
Do you have any interesting stories about the weekend?
Not too much. It was just a really good weekend. It was awesome to go talk to some of the people. I actually got to meet a couple of the drivers we'd actually talked to on the show before, and they may or may not have remembered. You never know. But it was pretty good. So. And it looks like now we're actually going to welcome Chase Briscoe into the Thunderdome. So we'd like to thank him for coming on tonight.
How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. First off, congratulations on the speed your car had in Daytona at the beginning of the season. Can you tell us what it feels like to zoom around the high banks in a stock car?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, it's definitely very nerve-wracking at times when we get going around there three wide. But other than that, you know, it's not too bad. You know, the sprint car deal is that's what I grew up doing. And it's pretty hairy, too. But, yeah, it's, you definitely don't realize you're going 180 miles an hour. But, yeah, whenever they start wrecking in front of you, it definitely gets a little hairy.
Having been involved in open wheel racing, do you have any hopes in the future to compete in the Indy 500?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, growing up as an Indiana kid, you know, a lot of sprint car guys growing up, that was always, you know, where they went. But now it seems like, at least my generation, you know, a lot of guys have never really went that route except for Brian Clausen. But, I mean, definitely it's something that's always interested me. I don't know if I have quite the guts to do what those guys are doing, but definitely if, you know, an opportunity opened up, I would definitely take it without a doubt.
How do you prepare for your average race weekend?
Well, you know, really, I don't really have any, like, special routine or anything. It's just, you know, I go to the track, and, I mean, one of the main things, you know, is just trying to stay hydrated. You know, you really sweat a lot during the races, so it's very easy to get dehydrated. But so other than that, you know, I really don't have any special thing I do. I just, you know, try to stay hydrated, and that's really about it.
What's your favorite track on the circuit?
As far as the pavement stuff goes, I've only ran pavement 6 times, so probably on the pavement I'd have to say Salem, which is 15 minutes from where I grew up, so it's always kind of been special to me. And then on the dirt side of things, I'd probably have to say Macon Speedway in Illinois.
How do you feel about the Gilmore engine and the composite bodies that are becoming the norm in the ARCA series?
Yeah, you know, so far I really like the Gilmore engine, and I've only driven the composite body once, and I was just at the test a couple days ago. But, you know, I don't have anything really to compare it to. I never got to drive the old motors or the old style cars, really. So, for me, I think it's a really cool idea. I know it saves the teams a lot of money, and I just really like the look of the composite car. It looks a lot like a NASCAR Cup car, so it's really cool when we go to these short tracks to see that style of car out there, that's for sure.
Well, I'd like to throw it out to my co-host, Michael Mullally, who has a couple of questions for you as well.
Thank you.
What intrigues you the most about stock car racing?
You know, really, I think just growing up, you know, it was one thing, you know, every Sunday I would watch, and it seemed like to me the best sprint car guys and just all the best race car drivers in general always made it to seem like NASCAR when I was growing up. You know, you had Jeff Gordon and Tony Stewart and just guys of that nature, and they were always the guys winning the sprint cars and midgets growing up, so I felt like if I was going to be one of the best, you know, you had to go to that route. So it's always just something that's interested me and just always been something I've always wanted to do.
In your opinion, what is the toughest part about being a professional race car driver?
Honestly, I don't really consider myself a professional yet. I feel like I'm not quite to that level yet, but if I had to say anything, it'd probably just be the traveling and the hours. There's a lot of time that goes into getting these cars right at the shop, and, you know, I go and volunteer my time at the shop. So there's a lot of late nights and then the traveling. You get back, you know, at 4 or 5 in the morning sometimes. Just trying to stay caught up with everything outside of racing is a really tough balance.
Which do you prefer, dirt track racing or asphalt racing?
That one's tough. You know, I definitely enjoy them both. They're just two totally different styles of racing. You know, the dirt's, you know, we got normally 25 laps, and it's as hard as you can go those 25 laps, where it seems like the pavement, there's a lot more strategy involved. And, you know, it's just two totally different types of driving style. But I'm really enjoying the pavement right now. Hopefully get to continue to do a lot more of it.
What did you prefer? Like, because you have a lot of experience driving, like, several different things, but so far, which do you think you prefer the most, open wheel or not open wheel?
Obviously, you know, open wheel's always been special to me. That's all my family's ever did. That's all I ever really did growing up. And, you know, we don't really have any stock car racing in Indiana, at least where I grew up. You know, it was all dirt all the time, and that's definitely something that's always going to be my passion. You know, I love sprint car racing and love open wheel racing. So
that's definitely probably my favorite. If I had to go pick the watch, it would definitely be an open wheel race.
Do you consider yourself a role model for other, well, race car drivers or race fans in general?
Yeah, I try to be. You know, I try to go talk to schools when I can, and really, you know, in my community, I try to be the biggest leader as I can and really set an example for kids, you know, not trying to, I mean, I've never had a sip of alcohol in my life, never taken a drug, and that's one thing I'm really proud about. Try to show kids, you know, that if you just stay focused and try to follow your dreams, you know, anything's possible.
If you had the opportunity to own your own racetrack or race team, would you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would love to own a race team one time, or one day I'd love to own a sprint car and midget team, and definitely a racetrack would be something cool, too. But, yeah, definitely a goal in my future is definitely to own my own race team.
What's your ultimate racing goal?
My ultimate racing goal is to be a champion at the highest level and just be considered one of the best that's ever done it. You know, I think that's everybody's dream when they're growing up. If you're going to be a competitive race car driver, is to be the best, and that's one thing I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be the best in anything I've raced. So that's just one thing I'd love to have as my goal, is just to be considered one of the best that's ever did it.
There you go. Well, we'd like to wish you lots of luck this year in the ARCA series and whatever other racing series you move on to in the future. And thank you very much for coming on the program tonight.
Not a problem. Thank you guys for having me.
Once again, that was Trace Briscoe, who's a driver in the ARCA racing series presented by Menards with Cunningham Motorsports. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar, or simply by going to http://sd/ThursdayNightThunder. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com, the racing news section especially. We've done a lot of coverage this past weekend about the Mobile 12 Hours of Sebring, the IMSA race that was held this past weekend, as well as the Gator Nationals, which we were pleasant enough to go to last weekend and to discuss on the program tonight. So I'd advise you to check that out. We have some good interviews with some of the winners there, as well as a full review of the event. So be sure to check that out. There's also a lot of more articles that are in the pipeline about not only the NHRA, but also IndyCar. There's some new IMSA articles I'm working on, and I'm working on a few new driver interviews for this program as well. So we've got a lot of good things coming, and hopefully you're around to listen to them. In addition, if you're a fan of South Florida, and who isn't, be sure to check out the latest news and information about our slice of paradise at Palm Beach Happening, which can be found by visiting palmbeach.happeningmag.com. You can also search for us on Facebook by looking up Palm Beach Happening in the search bar. There's some awesome contests going on there at Palm Beach Happening, where we're giving out free tickets to the Palm Beach Zoo, a family four-pack, as part of our coloring contest. And I know a lot of people are big into coloring now, so check that out. We're also giving out a family four-pack of tickets to see the Florida Panthers on the March 31st when they take on the New Jersey Devils. It'll be Rat Night, where the first 10,000 people in the arena get their own personal little squeaky rat toy to throw on the ice if the Panthers actually win. And they've been doing pretty well, so there's a good chance of that. So be sure to check out Palm Beach Happening on Facebook for your chance to enter and win valuable prizes.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome, when we will once again delve into the wonderful world of modern motorsports with guests representing the top series in the nation and beyond.
Have a nice evening, and we'll see you next week.